Hello, everybody. Welcome back to For the Girls. We are here for our Japanese Grand Prix preview. The race is going to be at Suzuka. Fans, drivers, they love this track. Almost everyone has said it's one of their favorites. It's going to be such good energy all weekend. The grandstands are packed, like literally starting even on Thursday. So it's going to be really amazing. We cannot wait for the race this weekend. And then fun little announcement, we launched our brand new incredible merch yesterday. So head on over to our website. You can check that out. And then a reminder, if you enjoy the show and you enjoy hanging out with us every week to recap the races, please rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. It means the world. And with that, I'm Chessa.
I'm Tiggy.
And I'm Sarah. Some background on the circuit. Like Chessa said, this is really a fan and driver favorite. It's 5.8 kilometers and 53 laps. It has a really famous figure eight shape. So the track crosses over itself and there's snaking S curves. It makes it a really challenging race for the drivers, but also just one of the best ones to watch. Interestingly, it's also the most symmetric track given the figure eight. So drivers expend as much energy turning left as they do turning right, which puts equally balanced pressure on the tires, which is so interesting. So when you think about our standard either clockwise or counterclockwise tracks, it's very unbalanced. And last year, tire drag was such a big issue here that the race was a three-stopper for most of the grid. So we'll see what it's looking like this year.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one. Super narrow, high-speed circuit with fast corners, very little room for errors, only one DRS zone. There's also some elevation changes. And so while it's not super easy overtaking-wise, there's typically a decent amount of action, which is fun. And then in terms of the racing we can expect, so early forecasts for the weekend are calling for potential rain. So this could be the first wet race of the weekend. We can expect to see some different race strategies, potential surprises. And also it looks like it's been downgraded, but there was a really massive earthquake that hit Taiwan and there were some tsunami alerts in Japan. But hope everybody in Japan is okay and obviously Taiwan as well. It looks pretty brutal, but yeah, hopefully all will be well with the race.
A little bit of background about this track. I think it's super interesting. So it was built after World War II when Soichiro Honda, the founder of Honda Motors, decided that his company needed its own test track because Japan lacked proper testing roads for testing at high speed. So that's a very fun fact. So even though it was built in the 60s, it didn't have its first F1 race until 1987, and the first few years did not disappoint. So I'm going to go through some of the insane drama that happened right off the bat. So 1987, Nigel Mansell crashed his Williams Honda in practice, effectively handed over the title to his teammate Nelson Piquet. 1988, the race was the decider between Senna and Prost, who were both McLaren drivers and notorious rivals. And then in 1989, it was the infamous Prost-Senna collision we talked about a lot in the past, but a lot of really incredible history at this track just from its inception.
There's also the really tragic accident here, which occurred in 2014 with Jules Bianchi, which we have talked about a lot on the podcast. It's the last fatal accident in an F1 race. It was super wet conditions. He had a major crash, died the following year. This instituted the halo. It was the spark for a lot of safety changes in F1 because there was really poor drainage at the track, and there was a tractor removing another car that had gone off in the same area, and he crashed into the crane. And this was why I think it was 2 years ago. It was super, super upsetting when Carlos had a big crash. There was a tractor out in the racing line with Gasly still going at high speed. So really scary. And hopefully if it's raining, the FIA is very on top of safety this weekend.
Yeah, totally agree. Pierre, it was like harrowing a couple years ago because Pierre was very close with Jules Bianchi as well. So just a horrible, horrible situation. For last year's race was actually held later in the season in September, but in alignment with F1 sustainability goals and calendar regionalization, the race has been shifted to earlier in the calendar to allow for more or less co-location.
More or less.
China. But ironically, since we are going to be expecting potential rain, the move shifted the race away from Japan's traditional typhoon season. But it looks like we may still be getting some drops. But Last year, Red Bull wrapped up constructors with an amazing weekend for Max. He had the biggest gap between pole and P2 in Suzuka in 20 years. So
wow.
Classic Max fashion.
Classic.
This was also a race that really highlighted Checo's struggles with the Red Bull, his widening gap to Max. So all around, it was a great, great weekend for Red Bull and for Max in particular.
And this race was where we saw kind of like a lot of crazy, I want to call it drama, but a lot of action, maybe I'll call it drama, a lot of action right out the gate. So Max was fending off both McLarens, and then we had both Ferraris, Checo and Lewis, running four wide on this already super narrow track. There was a bunch of chaos. Lewis and Checo made contact. There was more contact further back on the grid. There was a safety car. And then this is like what launched the whole, I think for Checo this year, that race was a really bad race, but basically it was a whole domino effect on his race. He had to get not one, but two new front wings. He got hit with a bunch of penalties, and then the team decided to retire him. But then in a bizarre turn of events, this is when they put him back in the car to try to send him out to serve his penalties.
This was so crazy.
It was so confusing. He was like sitting in the car for 20 minutes, and then he just went back out and did one lap to serve the penalty.
But it was so he wasn't going to get the penalty, the grid drop for the next race, right? Which feels like a loophole. Yeah.
It is a loophole.
Definitely a loophole. He was sitting in the car in the garage. Not even kind of out in the pit area, but they had fully moved the car back into the garage.
Yeah, so that was a crazy race for him. And then that whole race overall had four DNFs, if you include Checo. And then we had both Williams, Stroll, and then Bottas. But excitingly, this was also McLaren's double podium and Oscar's first ever podium. So also a very exciting race for them.
To jump into teams for Red Bull, we are on the edge of our seats here to see if Red Bull has been able to move on from last weekend's blip in the radar, aka Max's fiery break exit from the race, and move on as if it never happened. This could be the first weekend in a while that they're heading in with a little bit of a fire lit under them. Sorry for the pun. And Ferrari is only 4 points behind them in constructors. So very close at this point. All eyes are on whether Red Bull can extend that gap. I think we can all agree they probably will, but at least at this point.
Easy for you to say.
I think at this point, looking at Checo scoring high in the points, both Ferrari drivers up in the points will be important for both teams, especially Ferrari, to try to week by week keep that gap as close as they possibly can. And definitely listen to our interview with Callum, aka F1 Mech, on Instagram if you haven't yet. He is a power unit technician and he is the right rear wheel gun. He gives so many amazing details about life in the Red Bull garage. It was amazing getting to chat with him.
That was such a fun interview. He gave us so many fun tidbits. The WhatsApp group chat kills me, the internal competition between him and the other left rear wheel gun man.
I love that. Sarah goes, so funny. Sarah goes, he is the right rear wing gun. I can't speak, but like he
can't
is,
even say it.
He is the
wheel gun.
he is.
The number of DMs we got from people who were like, we place like find Callum every single race weekend because we're always looking for him. He's always there. It's like so great. So
amazing.
That was a great interview. For Ferrari, the talk of the town, Ferrari's pace in Australia, like we said, they're a mere few points behind Red Bull. And if Carlos had raced in Saudi instead of getting his appendix out, there's a decent chance he would be beating Max in the championship. I mean, you never know.
That's crazy.
What would have happened, but he is up there. He's also on a hot streak after his heroic race last weekend. We're just so excited to see how he continues to stack up against Charles. Charles and Charles' world, his continuing renaissance.
Our renaissance man.
He's opening an ice cream store that's expected to open in Milan called Lec. Is that supposed to be like Lick, but also Leclerc?
I don't think it's supposed to be like Lick. That would be so strange.
Oh, I didn't realize it was an ice cream store. I thought it was a merch line or something.
The rumors are it's an ice cream store, but yeah, the Instagram was very sparse and didn't give many clues. But yeah.
That is so funny.
I'm sure they'll have cute merch at the ice cream store. So maybe I'll get my family in Italy to go get some for us.
Well, girls road trip to Milan.
Casual.
So the main question here, I feel like, how much pace does Ferrari really have? Do we think that even without Max DNFing in Australia, they could have beat the Red Bull? There's also been lots of talk about signs going to Red Bull or Mercedes. Like, what do we think about all of that?
I think Ferrari has had really incredible pace. The first three races of the season has looked really strong, but that's because all of the stars have aligned, aka like conditions seemed perfect. There was no major mistakes in the pit lane, like all these different things. And with the weekend showing potential rain, that's going to throw sort of like a wrench in things for Ferrari, and where it's going to be a situation where conditions are not perfect. So I think I'd love to see how Ferrari can fare in these conditions. And I think this weekend will be a big teller for if the Ferrari pace really is here to stay, or something that we can count on as something to challenge the Red Bulls for the rest of the season.
I don't want to majorly jinx anything, but just about the errors, it does seem like this season in terms of pit strategy, pit calls, actual execution, they've been less error prone than in the past few years. But I think Chess is totally right. It's been kind of near perfect conditions. They were able to stick pretty closely to their planned strategies, for example, with Sainz last time out. So it'll be interesting to see, because as we all know, Monaco style, there's been some tough rain pit stop calls on this team before. So I'll be very curious.
Well, at least it's not Monaco, because then we would be doomed. At least it's
for sure.
Except Carlos has gotten so good at his own tire strategy, so you never know.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. And I'm also loving the healthy debate. Again, we've only had three races this season, but of is Carlos better than Charles? Did Ferrari make a massive mistake in just like signing Charles and letting go of Carlos so early? I mean, we've seen what Carlos has been able to do so far this season has been pretty incredible. He's always been really good at calling his own strategy, been a very smart racer, takes risks. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the season plays out. Like, obviously Sainz has a fire lit under him because he's unemployed, quote unquote. But yeah, he's kind of showing Charles up at the moment, even with an appendix out.
Literally, I cannot wait to see what's going to happen. Okay, for Mercedes, they will be looking to basically forget last weekend, what with Lewis's DNF due to mechanical failure and then George's really scary crash out. And what I want to talk about is the team and the team dynamic. So it seems like the team might be coming to terms with the fact that this might not be the year that they had hoped for. Again, we're three races into a 24 race season, so I might be speaking too soon. But earlier in the season, Lewis had expressed kind of a general lack of confidence in their current car for this year. And then off the back of the Australian GP, Toto had some spicy things to say. He said, you know, obviously we started the season in the belief that the car was better than last year. And then he had this quote, like, on one side, I want to punch myself on the nose. Like, the car really isn't doing great. But he does have that, like, little bit of optimism saying that, you know, when you do get things right, it's kind of a really fast unlock moment and you can turn things around pretty quickly. But he said, quote, it's a very tough time. And I just think sentiment at the team might not be where it needs to be for everyone to really be firing on all cylinders. And apparently Toto was actually...
A number of car puns so far in the past 10 minutes.
I'm sorry. Apparently Toto was supposed, like, it had been scheduled before the season that he was going to miss this weekend's race. And now he canceled those plans and he will be there because I think they need a leader. But what do we think? Do we think Mercedes has it in them to turn it around this year? And then what do we think about Toto's comments? I know he also said something about wanting Max. So take it away, ladies.
I think you can never count out a team like Mercedes to turn it around. Does that mean they're going to be fighting for P1? Probably not in constructors at this stage, but you never know. So yeah, I think it's pretty brutal. The car is unpredictable again. The drivers aren't enjoying it. Like, obviously George's race last weekend was a disaster and Lewis didn't fare much better. So I think it's really tough morale-wise. And we talked about Lewis's thoughts and morale last episode, just about how difficult it probably is for him, like with one foot out the door. But in all of his interviews in the big GQ spread, he keeps saying like he wants to lift Mercedes as high as it's ever been in this last year. So I don't know. I think it's possible. Toto's comments about Max being first choice. I don't think Max is going to Mercedes. I don't see Max leaving Red Bull. I mean, it's as frustrating as it is, it seems like a lot of the, you know, noise and drama and speculation about whatever was happening at the top with Christian and the leadership there seems to have quieted a ton. And that's, I think, all Max wants, whether that's right or wrong. It's just, you know, I think we haven't been hearing from Jose lately, at least not in the media or spoken very loudly. So I don't know. I don't see Max going to Mercedes, but Sarah, what do you think?
Well, first, I guess I don't know if everything quieting down is what he wants, given that his dad kind of reignited the whole thing and then Max stood by him so strongly. It seems like maybe they made their case and it wasn't successful right now, so they're standing by. I don't know, but I don't know if I would say that quieting down necessarily would be what he wants, but I definitely agree he's not going to Mercedes in the near future. You never know what could happen a couple years out, but I guess my main question is kind of taking as a Mercedes fan, why would Toto say this? Like, part of me just feels like there's probably weird dynamics going on between Toto and Lewis. Toto's mad that Lewis left. Is Toto just stirring the pot? Like, it's a super weird comment to make at a low morale team when your marquee driver does not get along with Max.
And it's so far-fetched.
I think the Lewis-Max situation is a little bit water under the bridge at this point. Like, they're not up at the top. Like, Lewis isn't fighting wheel to wheel with Max every weekend anymore. And if you read the GQ thing, it was basically like Lewis is at peace with this, and I don't think he ever blamed Max for it. I know they had like a ton of intense competition and all of that, but I actually don't think there's as bad of blood with Max and Mercedes as maybe people think. But I also think Toto's probably being honest. Like, if he could have any driver on the grid, it would be Max Verstappen. He's the best person there is right now in Formula One. So I'm sure there's a little bit of the like stirring the pot situation, but I also think Toto's probably just stating what he wants, which is the best driver in Formula One at the moment.
True. I also totally agree that I think all of this and the fact that Jos has a relationship with Toto, I think it's all made clear that that relationship is much less fraught than I think I thought it was, or maybe that it appeared a couple years ago. So you never know what could happen.
You never know.
We all need a little extra health boost sometimes, and Fleur Marché makes it easy for us to supercharge our wellness. Their botanical wellness patches have been such a fun addition to our routine. We just stick them on wherever we want. They have them for sleep, relaxation, focus, and other things. And the patch delivers ingredients to your body in a subtle but effective way, and the results last up to 12 hours. Fleur Marché also has botanical gummies and their new organic nutritional powder Green Machine. They only use the best ingredients and are tested for potency, contaminants, and heavy metals before and after production.
And one of our favorite things, we also love that the company is founded and inspired by women with the mission of helping us feel 100% every single day so that we can have full energy and crush it every day. Find your new wellness essentials at fleurmarché.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 20% off your first order site-wide with promo code FORTHEGIRLS at checkout. Orders over $50 also get free shipping. Go to fleurmarché, FLEURMARCHE.com. Use code FORTHEGIRLS for 20% off your first order.
Okay, friends, it's festival and concert season, and you know it's all about the boots this year. That's why you need to make Tecovas your number one place for festival style this spring. And don't forget to shop their seasonal and limited edition offerings, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. We love Tecovas. They have a first wear comfort, which basically means there's no break-in period. It's the best thing ever. So stop by your local Tecova store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's really no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it to a store, though, just visit tecovas.com, T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Okay, moving on to Alpine. Like we keep saying, there's only up to go from here for this team after another no weekend. After another no points weekend in Australia, we're kind of just sitting tight and waiting to see when their improvements can come, if they ever do. So not much to say, but keep your eyes peeled.
for McLaren. So McLaren was so competitive here last year, but since they're starting the season on a much stronger foot, expect them hopefully to be strong competitors this year as well. Would love another double McLaren podium.
McLaren win. But
McLaren win. Would love that. If you guys have seen their livery, it's super cool. They worked with a Japanese artist to do some like upgrades on their side. I don't know if it's on their side pods, but it looks really cool. But some news in the McLaren house, there was a technical shakeup announced this week. So 3 months ago, McLaren hired former Ferrari chief designer David Sanchez. And this week he announced that he will be leaving the team after a mere 3 months, saying that, quote, the role we envisioned and had agreed to was not aligned with the reality of the position I found.
Oof.
Do you guys have any theories on that? Like what in the world?
It's probably not about the role. It's probably like when you're up at the top and you're amongst leadership in a team and you come in as a designer and have a specific vision. And, you know, perhaps he was just not able to implement or execute the vision in the way that he had wanted to. I think it's probably nothing to do with McLaren, nothing to do with David. It just wasn't a good fit. You know, it happens sometimes. But I don't know if I would publicly say that.
Like, 3 months in, that feels very strange.
I know, but better to kind of like pull the bandaid off at the beginning. I feel like 9 months in is when it would have been kind of even weirder, as opposed to just like dip your toe in, doesn't work, get out. And with all the other shakeups that we've been seeing around all the other teams, there is so much movement. You know, we think about movement happening all the time in the driver space, but team leadership is just as important, and there's always a lot of movement there. And we'll talk about some news and rumors around that too later.
I wonder, one possible theory is maybe focus on the 2026 car and the 2026 regs versus current. Like maybe either he wanted to focus on the current car or wanted to focus on the 2026 regs. And yeah, just the situation shook out in such a way that he wasn't getting the project he envisioned. But I totally agree with Tiggy that I think it's really, 3 months is bizarre. And it's bizarre to make such a public statement about it. So
yeah.
Seems like something went on.
Yeah, the whole McLaren technical orbit is interesting. Like they did that whole split role thing last year. And
maybe that had to do with it too. Like it just wasn't the right place.
For stake, the biggest thing we are thinking about for the team is their pit stops. Knock on wood. Can they work through their issues there and give their drivers a fighting chance? There have been some rumors that it's, you know, a mechanical thing or, yeah, I don't know what exactly is going on. Maybe it's not the pit crew's fault. Maybe there's something strange happening with the nut or mechanical related issues, but I hope they figure it out.
They need Callum, the right rear wheel gun.
He is the new gun. They need to just get that gun.
They need the gun. They need the WhatsApp group chat with all the data.
Yeah, but side note, listen to that episode because Callum talks about kind of all the things that could go wrong, what makes a pit stop go wrong. But you never really know. So we'll have to see what
happens. He was cracking up. We're like, what are some of the things that could go wrong? He's like, there are so many things.
He's like, why did you ask me this?
Literally anything under the sun could go wrong when you're operating in such fine margins of time, literally milliseconds. There are so many things that can go wrong. But that said, Stake needs to watch back their pit crew pit stop footage tapes.
Yeah, they need to
figure out what's happening. Yeah.
For VCARB, it is Yuki's home race. He finished just outside the points here last year with his recent strong performances out qualifying Danny every race this season, plus his P7 finish in Australia. It seems like the stars could be aligning for a strong home race points finish here. Ayumu Osawa will be driving in FP1 in place of Danny. So it'll be an all-Japanese lineup for the first practice, which is really exciting for a home race. Iwasa is competing in the Super Formula Championship this year. He previously competed in F2 and was Rookie of the Year in 2022. So kind of the main discussion here, which we've been talking about, is what are the consequences if Yuki has a really strong points finish here and Danny does not? And also, is Yuki a contender for the Red Bull seat?
People keep saying that he's a contender for the Red Bull seat. I don't think he'd be a contender for 2025. There's too many other eligible drivers who have their hats in the ring as well. But I would say never, and Yuki has been looking really strong, so he could definitely be in the Red Bull orbit in the near to far future. Is that vague enough?
Yeah. I think if you're looking, if you're Red Bull right now and you're looking at Checo and you're looking at Yuki and you're weighing them against each other, I don't think Yuki is doing enough to beat Checo in terms of that seat. Like, Checo's doing a really good job so far this season. Now, we'll see what happens if he has his what tends to be typical mid-season drop-off over the last couple of years. But
harsh.
I hope that doesn't happen. Harsh, but I think kind of true.
Yeah, fair, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see. But I don't think Yuki is like the steady ship that Red Bull may be looking for to back up Max. That said, Yuki is doing a really good job. But in terms of Danny at risk of losing his seat, there are some wild rumors from some media outlets, maybe fringe media outlets, reporting that Danny was given an ultimatum. If he doesn't pull it together in the next couple of races, then potentially Liam Lawson will replace him. Again, seems maybe a little too early to say that. Like, I don't think they would replace him five races in, but we've seen Red Bull do it before. I would not be surprised if Danny does not pull it together if they pull him out of that seat, which would just be such a sad fall from grace after that happened to him.
I don't want to think about that happening. Oh my gosh. Yeah. But I also really, I think I've always been a little bit more of a Yuki skeptic. I don't see him as a serious candidate for the Red Bull seat at this point. I don't know. I feel like he is often talked about as more of a rookie almost, when it's getting to a point where he has been, is this his fifth season?
He's four years in.
Yeah. At least. He's a pretty seasoned driver at this point. And so I feel like for someone four seasons in, if you were going to have a shot at a Red Bull seat, I kind of think you would need to be consistently blowing people away at this point.
Yeah.
It is true. He's out qualifying Danny. He's doing a great job so far this season, but I don't think it's quite there for a Red Bull seat.
What do we think this ultimatum, this alleged ultimatum with Danny is? Do you think they kind of, I would not be surprised if Red Bull gave him an ultimatum like very early on when he re-signed or got back on with V-Carb. And I feel like it could be like, you need to score X amount of points by the fifth race of the season. Otherwise, it's fair game, because he did not perform last year when we had expected him to, and we were also excited. And now for this season, it doesn't really surprise me at all.
I think I would be surprised if there was that explicit of an ultimatum, because I think he just has so much goodwill with the senior leadership of the team, and it seems like they really want him to succeed, versus with someone like Nyck de Vries, where it's a rookie, kind of an unproven, unknown quantity. I think it's a little bit easier, versus with Danny, as time goes on, it's going to become more and more apparent if he can return to his old form. But again, he just has so much goodwill in that organization, which it was a long time ago, but he has won multiple races with Red Bull. Like, he was a really, really strong driver for them. So I think that's going to get him farther than Nyck de Vries, even if there's concerns about his performance.
Also, the personality thing, the marketing, everything, like at least the way Drive to Survive portrayed it, which we know is not always, can be fiction rather than reality. But it just seemed like they're really trying to get Danny all the time in the right positive headspace to like smile and be happy and be showing his personality in the great way that he does. And so I also agree. I don't think they gave him an ultimatum at the beginning of the season, but it could be getting to a point where it's like, if you're not performing, like we gotta do something about this. So
I'd love to see him, if this happens, go back to being the third driver at Red Bull. That was a great role for him.
It's like ping-ponging around the F1 organizations. It's so rough.
Okay, jumping into Haas, my favorite team to talk about these days. After a double points finish in Australia, they're definitely looking to solidify their position as a true midfield team, as I like to say. Their biggest issue last year was tire deg and then not having the pace that they had at quali during the race. I think this year could be different. The drivers seem a lot more confident. And then because the team focused so much on getting a handle on tire deg, and if they can get that under control this weekend at a notoriously difficult track regarding tire degradation, I think we can see really good things from Haas. And it's also their team principal's home race. So I really am looking out for them. I can't wait.
For Aston Martin, the big talk this week is around Alonso, since he's made it very clear that he's looking to solidify his future in F1, has definitely been flirting with the idea of moving teams. Alonso, ever the one to be cheeky. But during a press conference in Australia, Mike Crack said, quote, "We want to make the decision for him as difficult as possible by giving him the best possible car." So Aston Martin so far this season, definitely not where it wants to be in terms of the car, especially after such a strong start to last year's season. But we're excited to see if they can turn things around. We still have many, many races to go, so we'll see what happens. But do you guys think Alonso will stay in Aston Martin or move?
I don't think he has any ingrained loyalty to them. So
money. Dollar signs.
Yeah, I think if he gets a better offer with a better car, he's out of there. So I think it's just a matter of whether that kind of comes to fruition. But I also think clearly an issue last time was his sensitivity to kind of these one-year deals. I think it's likely a lot of places would only be offering him a one-year deal. So maybe if Aston Martin car is doing well, I think they would probably offer him a multi-year deal or kind of whatever he wanted. So I think that will be a big factor for him.
And I think it won't be just the car too, because it sounds bad, but he's coming to the end of his career, right? So I think the last team or the last few teams that he chooses, the last team that he chooses is going to have to be one that has like a good marketing branding fit for him too, where he can like sail off into the sunset and
that's a great point.
Finalize his legacy on the way out.
For Williams, they have a lot to come back from after a tough weekend in Australia where they only had one car, and then Albon scored no points in Logan's car. This was the big chassis debacle of Australia. So they have Albon's car repaired now after the team worked really hard to get his car ready ahead of Japan. They got the car from Australia back to the factory and then back over to Japan in just 2 weeks, which is a Herculean feat.
Insane.
So both Albon and Logan will be racing, but they have no spare chassis available again, which puts a lot of pressure on the drivers to make sure they are not damaging their cars or having big incidents, which is especially tough in the rain. And that's, I'm sure, a really hard mentality where the whole point of being an F1 driver is you always need to be pushing the limit, but you really need to be driving more conservatively when there's no backup options.
So rough. Like, talk about domino effects. We always talk about Alex Albon's appendix, but maybe it's the spare chassis that's really the domino here.
This
the
is
first
crazy
domino to fall.
I think last year Logan crashed out here, and then they had during one of the pre-race sessions, and then they had to use their spare chassis. So last year they had a spare chassis here for Logan, so that'll definitely be mentally difficult for him as well.
Oof. Okay, hot takes and predictions. I'm going fiery hot. I'm going to say a back-to-back non-Red Bull win.
Flaming hot.
Shockingly hot.
That's crazy. I really hope that happens, but I'm not going to wish for it because I don't want to be disappointed inevitably. Okay, for me, Yuki in the points and outperforms Danny, and then we will see at least one McLaren on podium.
I am on the Sainz train. I want Sainz on podium, continuing his campaign for an awesome seat next year.
Amazing. Lovely. Okay, to wrap up this episode, we're going to go through some quick news. So some rumors that Dad Stroll, aka Lawrence, has made Adrian Newey a pretty crazy offer that would rival salary-wise some of the current drivers on the grid, which is insane. Like, what if he's like, Adrian, I'll pay you more than my son. Come on over.
He would definitely pay him more than Lance, definitely. For sure.
But Lance probably has a bigger trust fund.
So. Yeah, so all in all. But so this is just a rumor, but with potential unresolved issues at Red Bull leadership, like we kind of talked about earlier, the timing seems important. We don't know that much yet, but just something to look out for.
Some other news. Liberty Media has acquired the commercial right to MotoGP in a deal that's valued at over $4 billion. That is crazy.
Incredible.
They were talking about maybe some combined MotoGP F1 event at some point, which would be very complicated, but kind of interesting to do. And then Las Vegas. So the Las Vegas Grand Prix has released numbers that show just how big of an economic impact the race had on the city. Here are a few. So the total economic impact of spending for the event was $884 million.
Wow.
People visiting the city for the race spent 3.6 times as much as the typical Las Vegas visitor. The race generated $77 million in state and local taxes, more tax revenue than any other event in the history of Las Vegas. So massive numbers. Obviously, this doesn't get into the costs, both economic and human, but it's pretty wild in terms of economic impact.
We had a big launch of the new merch yesterday. We're so excited to see you all wearing it. Hopefully at races this year, we are absolutely loving it. I personally am very excited for the mugs for my coffee. And if you enjoy the show, remember to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. We really appreciate it. And we will catch you on the other side of Suzuka.